Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, this is Rick, and welcome to Affair Recovery Radio tonight. And hell, the gang's all here.
Well, most of the gang. We're missing one of the gang.
That's right. But we're really excited at the Affair Recovery Center because we're about to release a new and revised, not totally new, but a revised product that Leslie and John have been developing for quite some time. Probably Leslie feels like all of her life, I'm not sure, because she began the process.
A good portion of it.
Exactly right. She began the process long ago. And in our attempt to try to figure out how in the world you help the hurt spouse. And recently, we even did a survey, and we'll try to talk about that a little bit later on tonight. But for those of you who are listening to this broadcast tonight, or possibly as a podcast later on, I'd really like to begin by letting Leslie and John introduce themselves and why this has been an important topic and really maybe even the function that they've been serving at the Affair Recovery Center. For those of you who aren't familiar with us, I think you really will understand why this is such a big deal to all of us. So, Leslie, would you like to introduce yourself first for those who haven't heard anything about you?
Well, I know way back in the beginning when we started doing this radio show, each of us said a little bit about ourselves. And for those of you that listen to that radio broadcast, sorry for the repetition, but Leslie Hardy, and I've been a counselor with the Affair Recovery Center for over 5 years now. And when I first started working with REC, I really felt called to start groups for women who had been betrayed in their marriages, because that's my background. My first husband left me after 16 years of marriage for his affair partner. And, you know, for many of you out there, your spouses want to stay, and that's exciting. My husband did not want to stay. He decided he was out. And so one of my passions is recovery for the betrayed spouse, regardless of the outcome of the marriage, regardless of what their mate wants to do or not do.
So you figured out how to keep going even after he left.
Well, you know, through my life in different venues, I've encountered lots of people who, you know, whether they were still in the marriage or had gotten divorced, you could tell from their interactions that at some point in their marriage there had been a betrayal. And that was still what their life was revolving around. You know, I didn't know how long in the past it had happened, but it seemed like their life had been defined negatively by it. And so I greatly believe that people can recover. And although these are circumstances that nobody would ever choose, that as a person chooses to use them well, they can actually benefit and grow from them. That it doesn't always have to negatively define their life.
So, John, what would you add?
Well, probably the first
thing. Oh, when we're married.
Yeah, yes, that was going to be the first thing I said, because we neglect to mention that sometimes. But yeah, actually, Leslie and I had relatively similar experiences in terms of being betrayed in our lives. And I don't think either of us sort of set out on this path. I started in archaeology, of all things, was my undergraduate, and never really dreamed of doing counseling for a living. I worked with children with disabilities for a while, did my master's in special education, and then ended up going back and doing my doctorate in counseling. And after working for a while as a college professor, ended up sort of joining the staff with everyone here Actually, I sort of felt called to do it because I felt like as a man, I remember kind of when I went through some of that and my world was falling apart and my first marriage was falling apart, I really didn't have any kind of conceptual basis to know even where to start on how to come to terms with what was going on as a single parent all of a sudden and you know, trying to deal with a life that was spinning out all around me. But one of the things as I slowly came to terms with everything is I came to realize that there's not a whole lot out there for guys who have been betrayed or men who find themselves in this situation. And so I kind of fulfill a strange function at our counseling practice. I work a lot with people who have been betrayed, but I also work the other side of the equation too and do a lot of work with men and women who are suffering from sexually compulsive behavior, sexual addictions. Also work in the area of sex therapy and working with couples who have sexual dysfunction in their marriages. So I do a little bit of lots of different things, but we do have a men's group now for guys who are struggling with sexuality in different aspects of their lives. But Leslie and I sort of got together on working both the male and female side of the equation on betrayal, and there are some things that are very similar and some things that are a little bit different depending on the gender. But it's just been, you know, it's been a real nice opportunity to, you know, to kind of watch as God makes something beautiful out of something that at the time was very painful for both of us.
And I think one of the things that we've discovered in our work with couples is that being able to be connected, I don't know if y'all would agree with this, but I'm throwing this out, being able to have other people you're going through this program with and taking this journey with is really helpful. Would y'all speak to that, Ben?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, do you want to go? You want to talk, Leslie?
Well, you know, as Rick mentioned earlier, he sent out a survey and people sent in questions. And one of the questions is, you know, what was wrong with me? What was so terrible about me that my spouse chose to be unfaithful? And where I think groups and community are so helpful, I can tell a client sitting in my office, this isn't about you, this is about your spouse, this is about how they're dealing with life. You know, you're attractive, you're intelligent. It's not about you, it's about them. And they might believe it for a second, but they don't feel it because it feels incredibly personal. And I think that's where being in a community, whatever that looks like, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to do this online, is so that people can have community even outside of Austin. But there's nothing like being in a group, having interaction with other people, and saying to yourself, wow, she's really great, or he's really great. Maybe it really isn't about me. Maybe it really is about my spouse. And so what you know and what you feel can begin to come together in the healing process.
Yeah, and what I was going to say was that I know in my experience and the experience of some of the clients I work with, that the process itself was so isolating, the kind of grief that you experience after a betrayal. It's not like, you know, if there's been a tragedy in your family or something like that, people tend to rally around you when you've been betrayed. If, you know, in my case, I didn't even really feel like I could talk about it at all, so no one really knew what was going on with me. You know, to the extent that I did open up about it with some people, I felt like I was had the big L for loser on my forehead and didn't really want to open up about it. But it was just a very individual kind of grief, and it was a very lonely kind of grief that I went through. And I like the groups because it like Leslie says, it reminds you that there are others going through what you're going through and all those kind of areas for self-doubt that maybe it really isn't about me. And you know, not pretending that I didn't contribute to some of the dysfunction in my marriage, I absolutely did. But it's a nice way to actually to find some healing that you know, probably you'd be hard-pressed to find by yourself. I know one of my big things I always say is I wish there had been a group like this around when I was going through it.
Right, because I was surrounded by people who loved me, supported me, but they hadn't been through the same thing, and so I felt largely alone.
Right, so I think being able to provide that is going to be one of the things we've been working toward, and hopefully that's going to be one of the greatest things that we're able to kind of accomplish, is being able to network people so they can feel understood, feel supported, feel loved, and to help them, give them steps to go down this path.
And have hope. Because, you know, today I was on the internet and there was a blog site for betrayed spouses. And although it was really helpful that people were talking to each other, I heard a lot of discouragement. I heard a lot of negative, a lot of hopelessness. Because one of the things that I do feel passionate about is that people can have great hope through this process, that it's not all negative, it's not all the end of the world, my life isn't over, that there can be good that comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in my case, it was real easy to do some dysfunctional things with my anger, and when seeing betrayed people in some of those blogs that Leslie's are talking about, you know, sometimes it, if it's a men's blog, it easily can turn into, you know, what horrible people women are, or, you know, if it's a women's blog, it can be a man-bashing site about how all men are cheaters and all that kind of stuff, and that kind of dialogue I don't think is particularly constructive.
Right, because if we, as we've mentioned in earlier shows, infidelity has become kind of an equal opportunity, both genders, depending on the age group, are as unfaithful as, you know, so as the other. So a lot of times, you know, all men are scum. That's really changing because we see a lot more men in our practice week by week because a lot more women, even nice Christian women, are being unfaithful in their marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so when we did this survey, we actually sent this out a few weeks ago, and we were stunned. Obviously, this is a huge issue. We were stunned. We got hundreds of questions. We just said, if you have questions about how to recover, our list isn't even that big, thankfully, because I don't know what we would have done if we'd gotten thousands of questions. It was bad.
Well, we had some really great people going through them. So,
that's right. but it was hundreds, and so we were like, "Whoa, what do we do with all of this?" But it's so relevant. So, if, you know, we may not cover your questions tonight. We are putting out some reports, but I'll guarantee you, in the very near future, we will have an entirely different format for a product for you guys that I really think will help facilitate your healing. Because to us, what we want is years down the line, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, that you're healed and that you have a good life and that you know what's going on. It's interesting. I was reading some research that Stephen Covey was quoting the other day, and he said, you know, when people get divorced, in 5 years, only 19% of them report being happy. People that stay together and work through things, 68% of them report being very happy at the end of 5 years. So, you know, either way, whether your spouse leaves you and you don't have a chance, or whether you stay in your marriage or whatever, we just want people, you know, to have a really good shot at being able to be focused and have a life again.
Right, because for those of you who are out there who are in shoes like mine, where your spouse is out, they aren't giving you a choice, and so divorce is inevitable. We want you to be in the 19% that report they're happy 5 years later.
No, 68%.
No, that are divorced.
Oh, that are divorced, right.
Yeah, because a lot of...
We don't want them to be in the 19%.
Well, we want them to be in the 19% that are happy.
Okay, yeah.
And divorced 5 years down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have the choice of staying in the marriage.
Yeah, and probably the thing I would add right now too is that for those of you, if you're listening and you're really close to your betrayal right now, it probably may seem inconceivable to you that you could ever be happy again, and that's the way it often feels. And you know, we just ask that you trust that you can, and you know, the world's going to look a whole lot different than it does right now. But when you're in the midst of it, sometimes you can doubt if the sky can ever be blue again.
Exactly right. And in the survey, I just want to say, you know, we got so many responses. It was interesting as we broke down the responses that, you know, the number one question that people were asking is, you know, how do you rebuild trust? I mean, it was almost 2-1. People wanting to know, how in the world do you learn to trust again? But more than that, you know, the next is, you know, what do you deal? How do you deal with those painful reminders? And then it went down to how in the world do you forgive, and how do you move forward, and how do you recover alone? And so all of these questions are things that we're trying to answer, not only on this program tonight, but especially in a much more detailed way in the program we're going to be putting out in the near future. So if you are interested in having joining our notification list about when this program is available, and we are going to have to cap the number of people that are able to join this program in the initial stages here, go to affairrecovery.com and you can get on to the Hurt Spouse notification list so that we can sit there and give you information about the product as it becomes available. And we'll also be putting out some special reports as we go through, as we compile the data that's come in as a result of these surveys. So with that, let's jump into some questions. And I'm just going to let John and Leslie begin to handle these. And we obviously, with several hundred questions, we will not get to all the questions this evening. But at least we can hit some of the ones that are really pretty good questions. So first, let's see. I think we're going to need to take a break here for just a second. So thank you, Ronnie. And we'll be back in just a moment. Thank you very much.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on. If you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce sucks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
My name is Michael. You're listening to The Word.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio. So here we are with the questions that have come in on the survey. And so, okay, you guys, the first one. How do you ultimately let it, the behavior, go? How do you stop living in the past and start living in the future? This seems so incredibly difficult.
Well, and I guess the thing that I would say up front is that dealing with betrayal is a lot like going through normal grieving. As John mentioned earlier, you know, but you have the additional stigma of being embarrassed and not having support, and so it can be a little bit more difficult. But a lot of times people will try to let go too quickly. And you really have to give yourself some time to get your head around it, grieve the loss. Actually, there's a whole list of losses. But then after, you know, a period of time goes by, and it's a good chunk of time, you know, a lot of times people will feel better, you know, maybe after 6 months of their mate really showing that they're committed to being different. And then you'll dip again at a year. And then after that, you know, you'll begin to do a whole lot better. But sometimes people try to rush through the pain because it is very painful and nobody wants pain. And they'll try to go around it, and then it'll come back later to kind of kick them in the butt. So you really have to give yourself some time and space to figure out what it means, what you've lost, and to be sad about it. But then, you know, if 2 years down the road you're still thinking about it every day, then I think you begin to wonder, why am I holding on to this? What am I afraid of? Because then you're well past the time that most people need to grieve.
Yeah, and I guess I agree completely with Leslie, and I think the thing I would add is on a question like that, that I would say, and this may sound like some kind of Zen riddle or something, but that we really shouldn't be too concerned about the future, that we really need to concentrate on the present. And I know when there's been a betrayal, you know, sometimes the past is always in our face and we can't seem to shake it, and we have all those intrusive thoughts and things like that. But really your task is, like Leslie said, to sort of abide in your healing and the emotion and recognize that God is in the present right now. And if we can just kind of stay focused on today and making it through the end of today, we don't know what the future is going to bring. And a lot of our fear is future oriented. And so we can kind of play out all these what if scenarios by thinking about the future too much, you know, but we trust that God is here. The future hasn't happened yet. We work on us today. And we recognize that God's going to be in the future when we get there, too. He's already there, you know. And I think if we can just kind of concentrate on giving ourselves the emotional space to heal and make it through the end of the day, that's our biggest task right now.
Well, because a lot of times people will take the pain of the past to increase the fear of the future. So they'll go to the past, and then they'll go to the future. There's pain in the past. There's fear in the future. And neither are really wonderful places. Because if your spouse has shown that they really are committed to being different, and they've shown you that they're grieved over the pain that they've caused, if you look at them in today, you'll see something quite different. So some of the challenges to quit jumping time zones.
Definitely. And I think if we kind of use the past as a predictive scale for the future, that what has happened in the past is going to sort of dictate what happens in the future, we can take God out of the equation altogether. And I think one of the wonderful things about doing this job is seeing the many ways that God takes some incredibly broken situations and creates something incredibly miraculous out of them. And so, I mean, I guess that's the other thing I would encourage people to think about is that, you know, whereas we don't want to be obsessing about the future, recognizing that God has a tendency of making our worst his best and creating, you know, some very unexpected blessings to come out of it. You know, I wouldn't want to relive any bit of that time that I was going through because it was so painful. But I also recognize now what God did with that and the incredible things that came out of it. And kind of looking at our lives today, you know, bear no resemblance to the pain we were going through before. And it's been a wonderful ride.
Well, and a lot of times the person who's been betrayed looks at their spouse who's been unfaithful, and they think, well, they're going to do this again. But really, if the unfaithful spouse understands the pain that they've caused and they have some time and space away from what they've done, they really don't ever want to do that again. A lot of them are appalled at what they've done, and the biggest consequence they pay is looking at the pain in their spouse's eyes. They don't want to do it again.
So, question number two. Before my husband's affair, I felt like I was the love of his life. Is it possible for me to feel that way again after he betrayed me?
Well, I think it's possible to feel even more that way afterwards. But sometimes what I find as I'm talking to people who have been hurt by infidelity is when they talk about being, you know, the love of their spouse's life, there's almost a fantasy or storybook quality to it, where they needed to be the center of the story for their spouse. And so in some ways, after you've gone through this and your spouse has chosen you, I think it's possible to be the love of his life in a deeper, more meaningful, authentic way than kind of maybe the storybook idea that happened before.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say, that sometimes that feeling, as wonderful as it is based more on that kind of romantic kind of, I don't want to say immature, but undeveloped sort of love that happens at the beginning of a marriage. And, you know, Scott Peck, the psychiatrist, and many others have sort of commented on the fact that we almost need to get out of that honeymoon phase of a relationship before we can get into the deeper godly phase of a marital relationship. And I think sometimes like Leslie says, there is a storybook quality to that feeling and you know, trying to be Prince Charming and trying to be the princess for one another. A lot of that is really kind of based on illusion. It's not really based on anything solid. And, you know, when we get to that deeper, unconditional kind of love where we don't have to always be perfect for one another or always be, you know, feel like sort of the object romantically of each other's desire, then we can get to the place where we can experience true passion, true connection, true intimacy.
Yeah, and one of the things I would add, I know that y'all are writing the course and not me, but if I could throw it in there, is that if someone really does the work to grow and to heal and becomes a more godly person or a person of greater integrity and greater character, I find frequently that you'll find even a deeper respect that oftentimes that hurt spouse will come back and go, man, I cannot believe this person had qualities I never even recognized before that they never would have seen if they hadn't gone through right. this crisis.
Well, and you know, that I don't know where this person was coming from exactly, but a lot of times I do have clients and they'll say, well, I had the perfect marriage before this happened, and really they had a good marriage, but they only knew their spouse somewhat, and their spouse only knew them somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they weren't being fully seen. I mean, it's like some of the marriages that I've encountered doing this job where people say that they had a really, you know, perfect storybook kind of marriage. If you really delve into it too far, you recognize that there wasn't a whole lot of real intimacy going on there.
Right.
It's kind of like those houses that have the plastic on all the furniture and everything. It's like it looks really nice, but no one's really sitting down anywhere, and you can't really go into the living room. And there's sort of a it's more of a facade than a real place to abide.
Okay, and I agree. So next question. Now, this one's kind of interesting because I think everyone that's ever been betrayed struggles with this concept of not good enough. You know, what's the matter here? And so this person asks, how do you repair the lost confidence and the feelings that you were just not good enough? Because there is an incredible loss of confidence.
Definitely.
There certainly can be. You know, if you go to our website and you go to the different categories of affairs, some of the categories of affairs really have very little to do with the deficits of the marriage or the way the person even felt about their spouse. And Frank Pittman, one of the experts on infidelity, talks about the great myth that a happily married person will not be sexually unfaithful, as does Shirley Glass. And so there's a huge myth in our society that if somebody has an affair, then their spouse must have a deficit. And a lot of times, really the opposite is true. It's the person who is unfaithful who's feeling empty, who's feeling like they're not enough, and they're actually going out to try to fulfill whatever it is they're looking for so they feel better about themselves. But the other thing that I encourage the betrayed spouse to do, John talked about it earlier in his marriage, you know, none of us have been perfect in our marriage. And so as you look at, you know, your marriage, maybe you're part of the marriage, it's really important to separate it from the infidelity. Because, you know, going back to my marriage, well, even my current marriage, I'm not perfect. But
are you kidding?
Yeah.
You are rolling the tape on it, aren't you?
Don't speak to that, bro. Don't touch that.
I'll just let that one go.
but nobody's perfect in their marriage, but not everybody has affairs. And so, you know, take your part of the marriage. Take responsibility for that, but don't take responsibility for your spouse's infidelity.
Definitely. And I think what I would add to that, I mean, one of the things, too, is when you live with somebody who's in a destructive pattern of behavior, who's acting out in some way, often those people are very good at making you feel like you're the problem. And very often they will sort of vomit their own stuff onto their spouse, and they can be quite convincing and quite believable, making it feel like it's their problem or it's their issue that kind of sent them outside the marriage. You know, one of the other things I want to kind of speak on that is that I know that it's universally devastating. I think sometimes for men who have been betrayed, there's almost an emasculating kind of quality to it, where it's almost like a piece of their masculine identity, their very manhood, was sort of taken away from them through this process, and that's sort of reinforced by a lot of cultural and social messages that come across. You know, you couldn't keep your woman. What's wrong with you? All these kinds of things. But I think for men and women alike, it can feel like a very, very difficult concept to get your head around. I mean, that's one of the things Leslie and I are saying, probably, I don't know about you, but I say it more than just about anything else when someone has been betrayed, that it really isn't about you. But there can be this incredible head-heart disconnect. They can hear that message, and intellectually they can understand that, but emotionally they still don't feel that way. They still feel like, you know, if I had only done this different, if I had been June Cleaver and been the perfect wife, then he wouldn't have strayed on me.
Well, and I love something that Shirley Glass says. She says, you can't affair-proof your marriage. You can only affair-proof yourself.
That's exactly right. So the next question, we may park here for a minute. We probably ought to do a whole program on this one, because this is the number one question. Definitely, how can I stop being scared to trust again? Toss up. Go forward.
If you've listened to earlier programs, we like to talk not so much about reestablishing trust, but reestablishing safety. Because to feel like your spouse is safe enough to stay in the marriage, first you have to know that they want to be different. Then you have to be able to see that they are able to be different. And then it has to last for a while before you can begin to believe it. And so, yeah, we talk about being safe enough for each other. And that can go both ways in the relationship, as you try to restore the safety, because trust is something that we often misdo, I think, anyway. Just kind of going back to the Bible, God doesn't talk about trusting people that much. He talks about trusting Him. And so a lot of times we want to put our trust in another person instead of God. But if I'm honest with myself, I'm not 100% trustworthy. If my eyes are off of God for long enough, John shouldn't trust me. Now, you know, I have boundaries. I have a lot of things in place. I keep focused on God. So, you know, today won't betray Him. But we want to be able to put our complete confidence in another human being. And what I'm trying to say is, if I'm honest with myself, I can't put my complete confidence in myself. When I married John, I listened to his vows about, you know, his promises to be faithful and loving and cherish me. I wasn't listening to mine so much.
Yeah, and I think the safety element and building that safety again is very much, you know, a prime consideration, and I guess the proviso I would add to that is, you know, there's a fine line I think sometimes between rebuilding our sense of safety and withdrawing from the world or from life, and I think sometimes, you know, you don't want to mistake getting to a feeling of safety again with running away from the world or trying to hide yourself under a shell. I mean, I think sometimes the tendency is, when you've been hurt in a relationship, to say, that's it, I'm never going to put myself out there again. I'm not going to give them the chance to hurt me again. And there's that old kind of line of wisdom that says that, you know, without choosing to risk, you can't choose to love. And there is an element of risk to it. And yes, by choosing to, you know, to choose to try to move ahead, you are potentially making yourself vulnerable, and you are opening yourself up to a lot of potential hurt, but you're also opening yourself up to the wonders of life and the wonders of what God can do in this situation.
But it's also not about trusting an untrustworthy person. That's very, very different.
I agree.
Because the person who's been unfaithful really needs to be willing to show that they're working on being a safe person in the marriage, that they're willing to recognize the pain that they've caused. Sometimes I've had couples come in, and the person who's been unfaithful, you know, maybe a couple weeks later says, well, they just need to get over it and trust me. Well, I would disagree with that. I think the person who's been unfaithful needs to take actions to show that they're really committed to being different, that they're committed to being safe.
Most definitely. And I think sometimes one of the most loving things that a betrayed spouse may have to do is sort of follow that that calling of following through with a hard boundary, if that person continues to prove that they're untrustworthy and God's kind of telling them that it may be time to look at moving on. You know, this process isn't about always finding reconciliation if the person's not safe to reconcile with.
Right. Before there's a reengagement, I think, and that's, I think a lot of the trust questions are, can I reengage? Is it safe to move on? I really think that the hurt spouse has got to have had the ability to show consistency in terms of their walk, just that it, at one level, again, like we said, trustworthy. And at the same time, I think for people who struggle with trust, you need to struggle with the concept a little bit because, you know, what I think the problem with a lot of trust is that it's that trust allows us to operate in myths that just are not healthy.
Right.
So if you have someone that you really trust, do you have less or more communication with them? And it's probably a lot less, simply because, you know, you just assume that you know that you know that you know. And so it really doesn't help increase intimacy and closeness. It actually, in a strange way, kind of allows us to drift farther apart. And so living in that place of commitment and of honesty and of safety really requires more communication, but I think it actually produces in the marriages we know of a much, much deeper level of connection.
Well, and I think as human beings that there's this basic desire to put my trust in another human being instead of in God. And that's where I think my thinking will always trip me up, is that ultimately my trust has to be in God. As I'm in my marriage, as I'm in relationship, so my stability isn't based on the other person as much as it is on God.
Right. And that could be, it can be difficult to discern that when your emotions are all over the map too. I mean, when you know you're kind of riding that emotional roller coaster, it can be very difficult to sort of figure out what is God and what's my fear or what's my hurt or any of the other emotions that's rolling through your brain at that time.
But to get to the point where you're going to be able to believe that your unfaithful spouse is now really committed to you and committed to being faithful, that's going to take a while. It doesn't happen overnight.
Okay, for the next question, another tough one. How can you recover when your spouse is continuing with the affair? It's been 2.5 years. That he's been out of our home 14 months and now he filed for divorce, even though there are no grounds.
Well, and I guess for this person, my question would be, what are you trying to recover from? What is your recovery that you're looking at? Because it sounds like your spouse isn't interested in the marriage, isn't interested in reconciliation, has decided that he's out, as my first husband was. And so I would say for you that your recovery isn't about reconciliation of the marriage or restoration of the marriage. It's how do you deal with the circumstances that you didn't want, mm-hmm. that you didn't choose? How do you grieve? How do you go on? How do you let go? And that's a difficult thing. I mean, my biggest dream in my whole life was to have a great Christian marriage, a great Christian family. And I believed, you know, that if I was a good Christian person, I was faithful, I did these things, that that's what would happen. And so it was devastating for me. So I'm not saying that it's easy to let go of these dreams. It's hard. It's heartbreaking. It's crushing. But I believe your recovery is, how do you go on with life with God at the center of it, dealing with your husband's choices, dealing with, you know, the wreckage that you're left with, so that this doesn't negatively define your life for the rest of your life. I've had a client, I've had several clients, but one in particular came in 5 years after her husband had chosen to leave her. And she walked into the room, and her bitterness was so palpable that I could feel it. And she sat down and began to talk about her husband leaving her and being a single mom and all the devastation of it. It just was profoundly sad that her life was still being destroyed by what her husband had done 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I think your recovery is about forgiving, going on, and letting God use this, even though it's not anything you would choose.
Yeah, and sometimes that's about, you know, sort of giving yourself the permission to move on if your spouse really isn't interested in reconciliation or doing what they're, you know, doing their part to try to salvage the relationship. You know, Leslie sometimes talks about there being a fine line between being Christ-like and being codependent, you know, that we're sometimes called in our imitation of Christ to give sacrificially and love sacrificially in our relationships. But we shouldn't be cannibalizing ourselves to do that. And if you ever, you know, arguably, you know, some people may be called to martyrdom, but often in marriage, you know, we're not called to become martyrs to our marriage if the only outcome is going to be, you know, continued pain for you.
Although sometimes God does call people to stay in marriages.
Absolutely. And that's where the discernment comes in. It's, you know, if God is calling you to stay in this relationship, then you listen to that call.
Right. But I guess the other thing that I want to say about, you know, this person's recovery is it's not about moving on to the next relationship quickly. It's about really giving yourself time to recover from the first marriage before you run into another relationship. Sometimes people will just kind of bounce from relationship to relationship. They find themselves in the new relationship with the same old baggage. And so you do need to give yourself some time.
Definitely. And if you do feel particularly called, you know, for the author of this question to stay in the relationship, then you feel that that is coming from God, then you know, I have to trust that there is an outcome that you can't see yet and that you continue to trust in that. And we don't always have that crystal ball for the future, you know, but that's, again, sort of how do you discern that? And that's a question I think we're going to be talking about a little bit later.
Yeah, another piece there, how can you recover? To me, sometimes I think the place that God is best glorified is when you continue to be willing to let go and move on and live well. Because I think that's where you can begin to see the power of God even playing out in your life. Because as Leslie Vernick said, we interviewed her about a month ago, and she was just talking about that love will act in the best interest of another person. And at times, the most loving thing isn't to hang on. It's to move on, mm-hmm. and to go where God wants you, and not to be defined by something that's been in the past, but allow God to help you to walk through that fresh newness of life that's afforded through Christ in you.
Most definitely. And I think, you know, one of the cautions I would have for our listeners on that one too is you got to be very careful to listen to God and not to the world on this one, because you can get advice from all over the map on both sides of the equation. You'll have people, you know, very well-meaning individuals who will, you know, in a potentially abusive relationship, who will tell the person to stay in the relationship at all costs, stand for the marriage, do whatever it takes. And then you have, you know, quite another school of people often on daytime television saying that, you know, kick them to the curb. You don't let someone treat you that way. You get out and you do what's right for you, and you go find someone who's going to treat you right. And sometimes silencing the world and the advice of well-meaning friends can be a difficult part of the equation.
Well, it's listening to God, not good advice from people who love you. And that can take a while to really sort out what God's telling you, because it's an emotional roller coaster for a while.
Good. So the next one, timeline question. When will the pain stop?
Now, this is really, really tricky. some of it depends on what is the pain that you have. Mm-hmm. How big is it? How long did it last?
How are you expressing it? How are you letting it to come or not come? And
well, do you have pain from the past? Do you have trauma from the past? Because, you know, a lot of times people who experience betrayal have pain from the past, trauma from the past that they never really dealt with, and so it will resurface like a volcano at a time like this. But in general, if you focus on God and continue day by day to try to stay in today, let yourself go through the grieving. The pain that you have a year from the day of disclosure should be very, very different from the pain you have at the day of disclosure. And one day, you'll wake up and you'll have no pain, and you'll think, wow, where did it go?
Yeah, and this is one of those areas where sort of what I think is the correct treatment goes completely contrary to our human nature and our sort of instinct to avoid pain at all costs. You know, sometimes we'll try to sweep the pain under the carpet and try to just avoid it altogether, and it's like a bad zombie movie. It'll keep digging itself back up, and you find that you haven't really dealt with it fully, and it's still in your life. And so, you know, yes, it's possible. We've had people, you know, just get immediately just overwhelmed by the pain, and you want to find a way to unpack it in a manageable way, but you can't go around it. You can't avoid it. You have to really go through it and allow those emotions enough space to process them to the point where you can really put it to rest and move on.
Well, because sometimes people will initially push away their pain because they're afraid of losing the marriage, losing their spouse, and so they have this mindset that, well, God will bring good out of it. And so they minimize the pain, they push it away, and then when there's safety in the marriage, the spouse is back, then the pain will hit them. And so that's why there's not a specific timeline. It's very, very individual.
Okay, can I throw you guys a bit of a curve?
we'll say no if we don't like it, right?
Say not a fair question. Well, I was just thinking, you know, the third most frequently asked question here, we haven't hit the second two, was how to forgive. And so there's a forgiveness question here. Why is forgiving that person so important?
Well, and it's John knows forgiveness is one of my favorite subjects, so it's not really a curveball.
I know, it's slow pitch.
No, I think I can go get a cup of coffee between because she's off to the races here probably, but go ahead.
Well, and I don't know how you define forgiveness, because a lot of times, you know, when people are hit with infidelity and people throw out the term forgiveness, you know, you may not even know what that means to you. So I think it's really important to think about it and define it. When I was growing up, I was taught I had to forgive really quickly. Otherwise, I was in sin. So I did one of three things. I either minimized the offense, minimized myself, maybe it was even my fault, avoided the situation, the person, even thinking about it. And when I got to be older, I realized that none of those were forgiveness. That forgiveness is really a process, an event, and then a process. And I think the initial process is being able to say, this is what it is, this is how it felt, this is what it cost me. And then the event is when I like the accounting picture. They get a clean slate. I no longer hold them as indebted to me. And then the process afterwards is if they do something again or I remember it, I don't dredge it all back up. Ultimately, forgiveness isn't for the other person. It's for me.
So the reason it's important is for your own healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that absolutely is the short answer to that. I mean, sometimes we can feel really resentful. Why do I have to forgive him or why do I have to forgive her for doing that? It's not doing anything to them. It's about you. It's about getting to your own place of healing with that. And, you know, one of the things I've mentioned before is very often if you've ever visited a retirement home or something like that, you'll see people who've been through some very, very difficult things in their lives, sometimes just horrendous tragedies, and yet they have this incredible peace of spirit about them. And then you have others who are still carrying the wounds that they sustained maybe four decades ago, and it's turned to bitterness, and it's poisoning their ability to live life. And unforgiveness can do that to us. It can absolutely poison our lives. And the person who caused you the pain may be, you know, well on their way somewhere else. And so it is absolutely the gift that you give yourself. And you do it as an act of self-love.
Yeah, and depending on, you know, how much you're forgiving, it can take a while. I had one client who was married to a man who was a sex addict and had done a lot of things. And the way she did it was she categorized his actions into, you know, one-night stands, emotional affairs, prostitutes, and pornography. Because to forgive his infidelity all in one chunk was overwhelming for her. So she had to begin to break it down.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, that when we say that it's a gift that we give ourselves, that doesn't mean it's an easy process. And it's, and sometimes it can be a very seemingly overwhelming or if not insurmountable process. And what Leslie was saying, it's almost like, you know, and when Congress does a, you know, in Texas they have the line item veto where you can go kind of line by line and look at it line by line. I think in our forgiveness we almost have to do that sometimes and sort of set up the whole hierarchy and take on the forgiveness piece by piece, because when you've had a whole pattern of betrayals that may have lasted over decades, it's not something you can just flip a switch and suddenly you feel that peace in your heart.
No, and sometimes I'll ask people, you know, what is unforgiveness giving you? Because they're holding on to something that they've connected to forgiveness that doesn't belong there. But another thing that I just want to add on is, you know, I have the groups for betrayed spouses. Well, sometimes in those groups, I've asked people, have you seen forgiveness modeled well? And a lot of times people haven't. And so it's difficult to do it if you don't know what it looks like. But most people can identify somebody that they know who has done forgiveness well. And, you know, find that person, talk to that person. Try to connect to another person in the process so it's not just you in your own head. Because sometimes people forgive too quickly, and I would suggest to you that they haven't really counted the cost or what it is. And sometimes people hold on to unforgiveness for a very, very long time. So it's a good time to really look at yourself, define forgiveness, ask yourself, you know, how do I do it? Is there somebody who can help me? What does it look like?
And giving yourself, once again, the permission to take the time that you need to really work through the process.
But also, forgiveness isn't the same as reconciliation.
Right.
Reconciliation has to do with the other person being involved in the process. Do they recognize the pain they caused? Are they grieved over the pain that they've caused? I mean, going back to my first marriage, I have forgiven my first spouse. I've forgiven his affair partner. Did we reconcile? No, that's very, very different.
And we're going to go to the next question. Actually, we're probably a little too long to even answer the next question. I think we'll take the next one offline. So those of you listening, the next thing we're going to begin talking about is how in the world you deal with reminders. Because that is the second most frequently asked question. And again, we've talked about this on some of the previous radio broadcasts, but reminders are an absolutely huge thing. And in the Harboring Hope course that we're going to be releasing, we're going to deal some with exactly how do you do that. And because that is a huge battle, is it not? Just what do you do with those things when those thoughts keep coming up every day?
Absolutely. It's a big one.
Yeah, because our experience, I think, is, you know, you may be thinking about it 80% of the time or 70% of the time during the day, and you'd like to be able to think about something else besides.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of you know it's like a bad playback loop in your head. You can't seem to shake it no matter what you do, you know, and everything can seemingly set that off in your daily life.
Which is understandable in the beginning, but not so helpful down the road.
Right, especially when you've made the commitment to move forward in the relationship,
right.
And you keep all you can think about is something that happened, you know, 12 months ago, and you know him or her in the other person's arms, and you'd really like to just enjoy them in your arms, but that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Anything y'all want to add before we close the radio program this evening, guys?
Well, you know, once again, just hopefully, you know, you can hear a message of hope in all of this, that there is life on the other side of these things, and it's not always what we think it's going to be, but sometimes it's far greater than we ever could have conceived. And I know, you know, I'm just humbled sometimes by, you know, watching what God does in these situations, both in my life and the life of our clients. It's just, it's amazing. And, you know, even if it feels like there can never be any kind of brightness or hope in your life again, you know, give it some time. You may be surprised.
Well, and we've had many, many clients, a year from disclosure say, I would never wish this pain on anybody. It's the worst thing I've ever been through, but it's also the best thing I've ever been through. And now my spouse and I have the marriage we always dreamed of.
Right. And in closing, we'll take this thing offline and continue recording this. Just a reminder for all of you listening in tonight, if you are a couple, the Marriage 911 course. The next one will be starting tomorrow at lunch. So if you would like to join that, I encourage you to do that. And we're also going to be taking that course offline next month. So if you and your husband or wife have been thinking about doing that, good time to sign up because it won't be available in the month of June. So with that, I wish you well this evening, and God bless you, and have a great week.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
In the world.